Welcome to another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. We're currently in a little mini-study about the interpersonal relationship between the Romans and the Jews that really started back in the time of the Maccabees, but came to its climactic and very painful end with the Jewish War between 66 and 73. And in the middle of that was the destruction of the temple and of Jerusalem. Now, this is all really important as we're coming to the climax of this study because of Jesus' prophecies, which he made in 33, just a few days before he went to the cross. And that prophecy is what saved a lot of Jewish believers in Jesus' lives whenever they saw the events that we're going to talk about today happen, and they immediately got out of town. So we're in the year 66, and in the spring of that year, we have a man who is the procurator of the Jews named Florus, who's been blatantly abusing his position and taking money, bribes openly, not just from individuals, but from groups of people. And so the Jewish people complained about him to his immediate supervisor, which was the legate Cestius of Syria, whenever he came to Jerusalem for a visit at Passover of 66. And Florus tried to laugh all of that off, even though Cestius promised the Jewish people at Passover of that year, he'll do better. Well, as soon as Cestius was gone, Florus decided it was time to provoke the Jewish people into open rebellion so that he could kind of cover his crimes. And he almost got that done in the second month of that year, the second Jewish month. But then came Herod Agrippa II, who is a very serious Roman insider. He actually grew up at Rome itself. He's also very serious in his Jewishness. He is the custodian of the Temple Mount, and he's the one that appoints high priests and all of that. Well, he came in the midst of all of the chaos that was happening toward the end of the second month and calmed it down. He basically told those that had been all up in arms, you've got to rebuild the little connecting portions between the Temple Mount and the Antonia Fortress that you tore down, and you need to pay up what remains of this year's tax bill from the Jewish lands to the Roman Empire. And so they actually got all that taken care of, and then the insurrectionists kind of ran Agrippa out of town because they really didn't like the fact that he was taking a pro-Roman stance when they were so anti-Roman. The next big blow-up happened, which is what we talked about last session, in the fourth month, when Eleazar, the head of temple security, along with a whole bunch of others of like mindset, said, no more sacrifices for Gentiles. The Temple Mount is for Jewish people only. The Jewish religious system and its sacrifices only for Jewish people. And when the older and cooler heads tried to convince these guys that this went against long-standing tradition, it went against scriptural precepts, it went against even Pharisaical precepts, Eleazar and his guys totally blew them off. And we see everything explodes up into warfare, street fighting between these two groups. And I've been describing them kind of as the insurrectionists who are very anti-Roman and anti-anybody that's pro-Roman or even accepting of Romans. And then the other side, which is kind of the status quo Jews. They just want things to be left alone the way they had been for a long time. And King Agrippa definitely falls into the pro-status quo group, and so does Josephus, whom we've been using a lot of his material because he is right there in the middle of all this. So in the midst of all this back and forth fighting, the anti-Roman Jewish people kind of take over the entire city of Jerusalem and end up killing a whole bunch of Romans. First in the Tower of Antonia, and then the one that really sets things aflame, in the three towers of the Herodian Palace on the western edge of the city. The Romans had been in the palace proper, but when that was kind of overrun, the Romans holed up in the three main towers. And eventually they asked for free passage to leave. The commander, the Roman tribune, I think had come finally to the conclusion, this is dangerous. These are people that don't want us here. We need to leave. So he made arrangements that they would lay down their weapons and walk out and go away from Jerusalem and not come back. But the moment they laid down their weapons, they were murdered by the Jewish insurrectionists. And that really upset an awful lot of Jewish people, that this had been done on a Sabbath day, I believe, and it had also been done under color of promises made to these Romans of safe passage. Now, Josephus reports at this moment, and we're talking about sometime toward the end of August of 63, that he and a whole bunch of other status quo sort of Jews began to keep their mouths shut. They quit sharing their encouragement that war with the Romans would be a bad idea and that we need to seek a peaceful resolution. And so they feel that it's dangerous now to take that public stance, seeing people killed for being involved in that sort of relationship. So he says, this is in his life, his biography, that he and they were basically now hoping that the procurator Florus, of all people, would soon arrive with Roman troops, backed up hopefully by the legate Cestius out of Syria, and put down this insurrection. That's what they were hoping and praying for. Now, unfortunately, that's not what's going to happen. On that exact same day that the Jewish insurrectionists murdered the Roman soldiers at Jerusalem, Florus, who had rounded up all the Jews down at the city of Caesarea, executed about 20,000 of them, and then sent an unknown number of other Jews off into slavery. And he did that as the procurator of the Jews, feeling that they were part of this insurrection, and it gave him authority to take such drastic procedures. Now, the moment that news of Florus's atrocities got out, Jews throughout the entire lower Middle East, we're talking about from Syria down south, and then it actually catches fire over in Egypt as well, but Jews all over that lower Middle East began killing Gentiles in retribution. And then, of course, those Gentiles began fighting back and killing Jews. And we know that many tens of thousands, perhaps more than 100,000 people died on both sides of the equation during the next few weeks. It's interesting that at Scutopolis, which was a mostly Gentile city, but it had a good-sized Jewish population in it, the Jews in that city actually tried to join forces with the Gentiles in protecting the city from being overrun by some of these militant insurrectionists. But once they had fought off the Jewish attacks, the Gentiles tricked the Jewish people of Scutopolis to isolate themselves outside of town, and then they murdered them. And because of all these activities, Gentiles were being more and more suspicious of Jews who had anything to do with, you know, anything Jewish about them, but they were also suspicious of any Gentiles who had shown even the smallest amount of admiration for things Jewish. And then Jews, many of them were worried, will my Gentile neighbors kill me? Now, at this time, King Agrippa II had gone up to Antioch to meet with Cestius, the legate of Syria, because of his concerns over everything blowing up, thanks to Florus. But while he was there, he found out that even his territory, north and east of the Sea of Galilee, was blowing up into Jew versus Gentile fighting. Down in Egypt, the new prefect there was actually a secular Jew. But when rioting broke out, street fighting, hand-to-hand combat between the Jews and the Gentiles in his main city of Alexandria, he had to bring two legions into the fray. And we know that 50,000 plus people died just in Alexandria riots. And that's what brought Cestius south from Antioch, Syria. This apparently happens in the latter part of the sixth Jewish month. So we're talking about beginning of September. He brought his entire 12th legion plus key units out of some of his other legions, and he also brought thousands of auxiliary soldiers and horsemen and archers from local kings, regional kings, including forces from King Agrippa II himself. So this is not just strictly a Roman force. This is a Roman coalition of area area kings that are quite concerned that things have blown up. King Agrippa is going to provide major guidance to Cestius on how to prosecute his action against these rebel Jews, because after all, Agrippa is the custodian of the Temple Mount and of all things Jewish in the region. And so in order to maintain proper respect for the Roman Jewish treaty of old, Cestius needs to be sensitive to such things, which is why you need to understand, which is why I've gone into these great links to set the scene. When Cestius comes to Jerusalem, he was not coming there to annihilate the Jewish people. He was not coming there to annihilate the Jewish religion. He was not coming there to destroy Jerusalem or the temple. He was coming there in response to an appeal of many status quo Jewish people that these insurrectionists need to be dislodged from the equation, from the situation, because they have caused all of this trouble. It doesn't matter that Florus lit the fuse. These guys have made it worse. So as Cestius comes south, he comes south along the Mediterranean coast, and I'm going to be very quick about this. The first phase of his military operation was to basically secure the coastal region of Judea, all the way down to Joppa. This ensured the coverage of all routes that were heading inland toward Jerusalem. In addition, Cestius did a real quick securing of Galilee along the west-east roads that went through Lower Galilee in particular to the Decapolis and over to King Agrippa's lands east and north of the Sea of Galilee, which, by the way, the Decapolis had seemed to calm down. The forces there had gotten control of the trouble, and the same was true in Agrippa's lands. And so that was a good corridor to secure as well to the north. Now, as he's doing all of this, Jewish resistance is fairly light. And there's a reason for that, because the seventh month is arriving. And many of the militia-aged men were required by Jewish law and Jewish tradition to go to Jerusalem. Basically, if you were an adult male of decent health, you were expected to go to Jerusalem for Passover, Pentecost, and Feast of Tabernacles. So the Feast of Tabernacles falls in the seventh month, and many of them like to go up early so that they could be there for the annual observance of Yom Kippur, which took place on the 10th day of that month. So Cestius, having kind of set up his perimeter, begins marching his troops from the coast toward Jerusalem right at the same time that the Feast of Tabernacles is going on at Jerusalem. Along the way, he's securing cities and making sure that they're not going to be a problem at his flank. But he arrives at Gibeon, which is only 5 miles north of Jerusalem. He arrives at Gibeon on a Sabbath day with his 12th Legion plus associated military units. And much to his shock, there is a sudden surprise attack against his forces as the insurrectionists just pour out of Jerusalem and attack. They wouldn't have thought that the Jewish people would have done that, because Jewish people had a tradition of not going more than 1,000 steps on the Sabbath day. And Josephus points out that this was a major breach of Jewish tradition for them to attack on a Sabbath day, let alone travel that far on a Sabbath day. And so Cestius gets caught flat-footed. And by the time he finally gets his troopers into a secure zone at the evening time, he has lost 400 foot soldiers and 115 of his horse soldiers, while the Jews have only lost 22 fighters. And so this is the beginning of what we refer to as the great Cestian disaster, or the great Cestian debacle. Once that attack happened, Cestius kind of stays at the encampment of Gibeon, waiting for the Feast of Tabernacles to get over with. That happens, the last day is the 22nd. Of the Jewish month. That's actually the first day of October on our calendars. So the next 2 days after that, he also kind of doesn't do anything, because those are the first two travel days after the feast, so people can go away if they will just do that and get out of the zone of possible military action. And then the third day after the feast was over with is the 25th day of the seventh month. That was a Sabbath day. And so Cestius also avoids doing anything on that day. The following day, on the 26th of the seventh month, King Agrippa II sends some of his trusted advisors as ambassadors to the Jewish people in the city of Jerusalem. And he has sent people that the Jewish people in Jerusalem know well. And he sent them there in the hopes that they will listen to reason and surrender the city back up to legitimate leadership, leadership that's not trying to fight anyone and everyone. But what happens is when the leaders of the insurrection see who's coming, they assume that it's trying to make peace, and so they murder one of the ambassadors and almost kill the other, and he escapes. Now, the Jewish people as a whole are quite incensed by this breach of protocol because you don't do that when there's like a parley going on. And they chase the insurrectionists themselves back into the city, and Cestius, who's on standby, seizes the opportunity to basically chase everybody back into the city of Jerusalem and get it kind of locked up tight. And he establishes another fortification for his troopers over on what's called Mount Scopus, which is about half of a mile to the northeast of the city walls. I think it's where Hebrew University is located now. It's got an overview of the entire city of Jerusalem. It would have been a great place to have a command post. And then, having established that camp, he intentionally gives the Jewish people even more time to consider surrendering. But then, after 3 days, three more days, on the last day of the seventh Jewish month, the 30th of the seventh month, Cestius decides it's time. And so he marches his 12th legion down into the new city, which is a suburb that's grown up to the north of the city of Jesus' day. It's walled in, but it's not walled in nearly as well as the other parts. So he marches into that area. The insurrectionists that had been there run away to the Tower of Antonia and into the Temple Mount. And Cestius sets the new city on fire. He pushes into the upper city on the west side, and he sets up a siege camp next to the north wall by the upper palace on the west side of town. And he assails that wall for 5 days. And when the high priest and some of his supporters try to open the gates to the Romans, to let them come in and settle this matter, they are attacked by the insurrectionists. And the fight against the Romans continues. And not just the Romans. Remember, there's also other kings, including King Agrippa's forces, trying to take care of this. So after those 5 days, Cestius suddenly, inexplicably, we have no clue why he did this. He suddenly withdraws his entire legion back to the Scopus camp. Now, along the way, he tried briefly to attack the northern wall of the temple just east of the Tower of Antonia, somewhere close to where the Bethsaida Pool is. And again, people were trying to open the gates to him, but he's afraid that it's a trick, so he doesn't cooperate with them. And what happens next is where the tragedy starts. On the fifth day of the eighth Jewish month, we're talking about middle of October, Cestius decides to abandon this whole plan. And he takes his soldiers back toward Gibeon. And the insurrectionists, seeing their withdrawal, attack them all the 5 or 6 miles it is back to that camp. The Romans stay in that camp for 2 days. On the seventh day of the eighth month, they try to go from Gibeon to Beth Horon, which is not very far. And Cestius's forces suffer so many losses that they make a break for it to Beth Horon. And then finally, on the eighth day, being besieged by the insurrectionists at Beth Horon, Cestius leaves a diversionary force of 400 soldiers in the camp, while he and the remaining forces quietly slip out of the camp and then try to make a run for the coast. And it didn't work, because not only were the 400 soldiers at Beth Horon slaughtered by the overwhelming forces of the insurrectionists, but they caught up with the legion along the way between Beth Horon and Antipatris. And when it's all over with, the casualty figures were this: 5,300 Roman foot soldiers were dead, 380 horsemen lost. And the Jewish people pick up all of the spoils of war from that, effectively wiping out an entire Roman legion and scattering all of the associated king forces throughout the region. And now they thought for sure they had God on their side and that they could win against the Roman Empire. And boy, couldn't they be any more wrong.